my mom is smiling somewhere, man. I hear Michael. I'm usually in trouble with my dad, or it's my mom talking to me. It's one of those deals. It's hour number two of the Jim Rome Show. We're coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. When you need cash out of your home and a simple way to get it, Rocket can. We've been discussing a whole lot of Tua. That conversation not going anywhere just yet. There are some actual games to talk about. In fact, one that has caught my eye in such a big way, Bills and Ravens. There is no one better than I know to dissect all of what we witnessed last night on TNF and then what's to come this weekend. I said this in the last hour. He really is one of the sharpest minds I think there is in the game. The breakdowns that he does. If you're not following Brian Baldinger on social media, whether Twitter or Instagram, you are missing out. I can't tell you how many times I will watch back one of Baldy's breakdowns. You learn something. If you're a football fan, man, you will learn something every single time. He's an analyst for NFL Network. Baldy, always good to hear your voice, man. Appreciate you giving us some time here.
Yeah, Yammer. Good to be with you, buddy, man. Good talking to you. It's Football Friday. Let's get to it, man. What do you got?
Yeah, it is a Football Friday, and I wish I could start with more football-related things. We all witnessed Thursday Night Football and Tua going down. Big picture this for me because you played, you understand injury. Hell, every time I work with you on a set on NFL Network, every time you raise your hand, I think that is a clear sign that you know what it means to get hurt. But what did you make of the hit and the aftermath of Tua going down?
Well, I don't know what the umpire and referee were looking at. I mean, Josh Tupou slammed him to the ground. I mean, we're supposed to stop those kind of plays. That's number one. Like, that should have been flagged. We complain when quarterbacks get grazed by a finger, sometimes the helmet and the flag. We do complain about that. But that, last night, I thought was excessive. Now, the reaction of Tua when he got hit, I've never seen that before. Yeah. Mike, I didn't know what to make of it. I've never saw the whole two hands go into spasm like that and the fingers crooked. I didn't know what to make of it. Like, my initial feeling wasn't concussion, although you had to, you know, cross your mind. I just never seen a body react. Now, people have told me via, you know, the internet social media, for whatever that's worth, that they have seen that in some UFC fighting when guys have been, you know, kicked in the head and they've seen that kind of reaction. But as a player, and as an announcer now for 40 years, I've never saw two hands just go into such, you know, harsh spasm. I mean, I felt terrible for the whole thing, but I thought it should have been flagged from the very beginning.
Yeah. Baldy, you can speak to the player's perspective on this. I've heard it different ways. I was working on a show the other day with Michael Robinson, one of our buds, and he had said, hey, you know, injuries, and we weren't talking about Tua, this is a couple days ago. He had said, hey, like, we kind of know what the deal is. We sign up for it. And I don't think he meant we sign up to get hurt. We sign up for the potential for that to actually happen. Take me through the lens of a player and moments like this, whether you're the one getting hit or you see one of your teammates go down and have some of these issues that we're now seeing.
Well, everything stops. I mean, everything stops, Mike. It doesn't. You're no longer playing the game. You know, the Bengals are no longer the opponent and the adversary of the Dolphins. You're all in it together because we don't want to see anybody hurt severely at all. We know it's part of the game, like Michael said. That's true. We know what we signed up for. That's true. But when it happens, and it happens in front of you, and the stretcher comes out, and you're saying your prayers for Tua as an opponent and as a teammate, and you're hoping for the very, very best that there's no severe damage, no long-term damage, because you just never know in this game. And so that's the immediate reaction is everything stops, and you no longer are playing the game. All you're thinking about is, that could be me. It's not. So let me make sure that I give him all the support and fellowship that I can in that moment.
Baldy, you go all across the country. You talk to a ton of current players. You're at camps. You're at games. You're calling games. The whole thing. When the topic of concussions come up with current players, what are those conversations like? Do these guys feel safe? Do they feel like the protocols work and that's enough, or more needs to be done?
Well, in the case last night, I don't know what happened the week before. I mean, I saw the play. I saw the reaction to it. It didn't look like it was – it looked severe.
Yep.
Like, usually when players get up and they wobble, we normally think at this point it's concussion, get them off the field. That's what the concussion protocol is all about. Now, I don't know if there's a cover-up. I don't know if it was fairly diagnosed. I don't know any of those things. I don't know if any of us know. I'm sure there would be some level of investigation. There should be. But the eye test is, Stewart was in trouble last week. Should he have been playing this week? It doesn't look like it, especially after the reaction we saw last night. So should there be more done? Well, there should be more enforced if that's what's taking place right now. And I don't know that that's to be true. But the enforcement of everything, the independent neurologist, all the things that have been put in place for these type of situations, like, they're in place for a reason. Let's adhere to the guidelines that have been established so that these players have a good chance of being healthy whenever they finish their careers, a better chance of being healthy than people from my era or the era before, when there wasn't as much research, there wasn't as much information about head injuries as there is now.
That's a good point. Brian Baldinger with us, NFL Network analyst. You can follow him on social media at Baldy NFL. Brian, I do want to get your take on what we're going to see this coming weekend, because when it comes to analyzing the tape, I don't know anyone who watches more than you do. Bills, Ravens, Lamar, Josh Allen. Take me into the mind of a defensive player or a defensive coordinator knowing what you have to now line up on. I don't know if there's a clear recipe for success, especially from the Jackson side, because we've talked about this for such a long period of time. Can't make the downfield throws. Dude is making, he's throwing darts out there. So that narrative, I think, is completely bogus. Josh Allen, we know what he's capable of doing. How do you slow these dudes down?
You try to make stops. You know, like, the Dolphins didn't really slow Josh Allen down last week. They had the ball for 93 snaps, but they made stops. You know, they got the ball out of his hands at the 6-yard line, gave the offense good field position. They stopped him in the end zone a couple of times. You know, you have to make stops when you can. You're not gonna stop the quarterback. I mean, the Ravens played the Bills in the playoff 2 years ago, and Lamar wasn't very good. He put up 3 points.
Yeah.
He got hurt in the game. It was not a good performance. And he's not that guy anymore. He just isn't. He's got two legitimate targets at wide receiver that he trusts. And he throws to, and Devin Bingley and Rashad Bateman. Those guys were not a part of the offense in that playoff game. Mark Andrews, Isaiah Likely, the backs, J.K. Dobbins getting healthier, looked better as the game went on last week. The line played pretty good last week. I don't know what you do to either quarterback. It's literally a battle for MVP between the two of them on the field Sunday. I saw Lamar 2 weeks ago against Miami. Mike, he had a perfect quarterback rating in the first half. And he started the third quarter by making the longest run of his career, 79 yards for a touchdown. The Dolphins, you know, made that miraculous comeback, going the 4 touchdowns in the fourth quarter and coming back. But it wasn't because Lamar, you know, fell off. He was just as good all game long. So really, it just comes down to who can make a stop at a key point in the game right now. I don't know what the over and under is on this, Mike, but I got to believe that there's not enough points in that department right now.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that front. Brian Baldinger with us here on the Jim Rome Show. Baldy, concerns for the Chargers right now. Bosa, Slater, both those dudes on IR. Ribs for Justin Herbert. Issues running the football that are massive right now. I actually felt like if there was going to be one team in that division that was really going to challenge the Chiefs, I would have pointed to this squad. I don't know if I can anymore.
I don't know either. I mean, because, you know, injuries happen, but when they happen to a premier left tackle and a premier pass rushing defensive end, you pay those people a lot of money. You draft those people really high in the draft for a reason, protecting the blind side of your quarterback. I mean, the thing about Rashawn Slater, Mike, is you never, ever heard his name mentioned in the game,
yeah,
which is the ultimate compliment to a left tackle. It means he didn't get beat. He wasn't guilty of holding. He was just doing his job out there. So generally, those guys, he never got talked about. But he was flawless in his technique. And, you know, Bosa and Mac, I mean, week one, it looked like it was going to be just difficult for any opponent. And just see Joey go down last week early in that game with the sports hernia injury. It's devastating. And J.C. Jackson really hasn't made much of an impact so far. I mean, you talk about left tackle, pass rusher, and, you know, elite corner. I mean, those are three players that, it's not like just the next man up. Yeah, Storm Norton can go out there left tackle, but he's not Rashawn Slater. You know, you could put Chris Rump in there at defensive end, but he's not Joey Bosa. Yeah. You know, you can fill those shoes, but you're not getting the elite players or the guys that can make elite plays in a game to change the game. You're not getting that. And so there's, you know, they have to overcome a lot right now. It's not to say that they can't. If anybody underestimates the other guys that step in, then that's not pro football. But it's hard to imagine that they can play at the highest level minus at least those two guys right now.
Baldy, before the season started, you and I were doing a show together, and I can't help but think about one statement that you had said with regard to this team and how has played out. You had said Philadelphia to really be the premier team in that division. Just one question. Jalen Hurts, can he elevate his play? Can he be that guy? I think the answer is resounding yes through these first couple weeks of the season. You said, hey, it's Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson competing for MVP honors. I think Jalen's in that conversation. I still think it's Lamar right now. But from a Philly perspective, is it as simple as, yeah, they got A.J. Brown and all of a sudden these dudes are rolling? Like, how do you explain the offense looking the way that it does?
Well, he's been pretty peerless right now,
yeah.
Playing at a very, very high level. He expects that. He's been well coached. But last week against Washington, I mean, he threw the ball up. He threw the ball over 20 yards down the field 8 different times, and he either got defensive pass interference or they had big plays. So A.J. Brown, we thought, could do it, but Devontae Smith did it last week. Quez Watkins did it. Dallas Goedert did it. He's got 4 guys that can just go up and get it, and he trusts those guys to do it. And, oh, by the way, he's protected as well as any quarterback in this league right now. The line is playing great.
Yeah.
They're healthy. They're playing at a very high level. They protect them very well. If he wants to take off, it's his own doing, but he's not really looking to run. He did against Detroit week 1 because he was forced to on a couple of occasions, but he has that ability to take off. But right now, he's content to make the throws that are there. I think they'll get a better test against Jacksonville. They got a better defensive line, better pass rush with Walker and with Josh Allen, you know, with some guys there. They'll get a better test this weekend, but you got to – I think you have to wait until, you know, I watch Tampa's defense. I watch San Francisco's defense. I watch Green Bay's defense, Dallas's defense. I mean, there's some defenses out there that can really challenge a quarterback. And we got to see if Jacksonville can be that team and what Jalen looks like when he's really challenged right now. But I don't really feel like Minnesota did that much to him. Detroit really has their issues on defense. And Washington certainly didn't do that last week.
Baldy, I got to ask you one more just about another team because it's been looming. And when I was watching them over the weekend, I'm sitting there going, you know what? It's all good because Mike Evans is not out there. Chris Godwin's not out there. Julio Jones is not out there. Give this team a couple weeks and I'm going to say, hey, this is a bad memory. Then I'm hanging out at NFL Network and I'm talking to guys like you, guys who played, guys who coached. And I don't know if it's as simple as that. And I think some of you guys have highlighted some of the real deficiencies on this team. What's your level of concern for Tom Brady and the Bucs?
I'm not as high as what you just described. I mean, I think if Mike Evans was on the field last week, they would have beaten a really good Green Bay team. I mean, look, his first pass of the game last week was to Cole Beasley.
Yeah.
They picked him up at the bus stop on Wednesday.
Yeah, he was hanging out at home.
His first pass of the game is to Cole Beasley. The final drive where Brady takes him all the way down the field, he threw to one guy. He threw to Russell Gage. He trusts him. He's going to throw it to the guys that he trusts right now. It's not going to be Jalen Darden. It's not going to be Scotty Miller. Like, he's going to throw to the guys that he trusts. And they're going to get Donovan Smith back. It's not going to be Brandon Walton at left tackle. And nothing against Brandon, I mean, but he never started a game until last week, going up against Rashawn Gary and Preston Smith. But Tom Brady was absolutely perfect on the final drive when he had to be. That defense can play as good as anybody in this league.
Yeah.
So I don't have the highest of concern. They lost a tough game at home. There's no doubt about it. But Evans, Godwin, or Julio, they're all going to be back at some point. They make a difference, a big difference. And so Leonard Fournette, I don't think he's ever played better than he's playing right now. And those young guys inside are getting better. You know, so I don't have the highest concern. It's a long season. I think they're going to end up putting this together, and I think Brady showed you on that final drive what he's capable of doing when he has to do it.
Baldy, you are the best man. I know you're traveling, so I do appreciate you making some time and hanging out with us today. So safe travels. Enjoy the games this week, and hopefully I'll see you in person over the next couple.
All the best, Mike. You bet, man. Anytime, Mike. Talk to you soon, buddy.
Brian Baldinger, NFL network analyst. And I know I said this when we brought him on. I really do mean this. Every time he posts one of his breakdowns, I'm like, oh, I didn't see that. There is a real sense of education. So if you are a football fan, at Baldy NFL, do highly encourage you to take out his social media. It's really awesome. There's sometimes like I roll back like multiple times. I just rewind because I go, damn, like I didn't even pick that up when I was watching it. And you know, his explanations are great. So it really does a tremendous job simplifying things. And to hear his take on the Bucs, I got to tell you, I'm a little worried about that offensive line. Some of those dudes are not coming back. I don't know if I've ever seen Tom Brady look as frustrated. Look, we've seen him mad. Like that happens. Dude's played long enough. Feels like he wins every game, doesn't win every game, but I don't know if I've seen a level of frustration outwardly this consistent at this point of the season like I have so far. Like I said, offensive line is really what the biggest issue is. For as much as we want to talk about the offense, though, and I know Baldy just highlighted Evans, hey, they probably win that game. Yeah, you can make a strong case. I mean, that was a tough matchup for him. I think there's two teams in particular where the offense gets the headlines, and that's just not how they're winning football games. Tampa Bay, one of those teams, and you get it because it's Brady and it's the Bucs and it's Brady, right? Like it's TB12. Of course, we're going to be talking about that team's offense. That defense, though, might be the best in the NFL. I mean, what are they giving up? Like 9, 10, 11 points? I can look it up here in the break and try to figure it out, but they are as good as we've seen in the league. And then the other team that also gets headlines for their offense. And I get it because he's got the long locks and he doesn't lose football games when he was at Clemson. And there were some issues, obviously, last year with Trevor Lawrence and that team. The Jags defense is legit. Like, it's legit. And they smashed the Chargers over the weekend. Like, I didn't. First road win for Trevor. Are you kidding me? Now, I don't think they get this one against the Eagles. I think it's a tall task for them to try to win back-to-back road games. But I think that, like, I wouldn't even touch that one. Like, that one is I think that's a closer game than people anticipate. And once again, for as much as Trevor Lawrence is going to get credit and Robinson coming out of the backfield, we're always going to talk about these offensive guys. Defensively, what we're seeing is pretty damn impressive. Baldy touched on this, the Lamar-Josh Allen matchup. All right, still to come here. I know we'll still talk quarterbacks here. Two MVP candidates. We're not done talking about Jackson and Allen, but tell you about one quarterback who struggled in a loss last week that I actually think holds the keys to an NFC crown. The answer's coming up. Mike Yam filling in for Jim Rome on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to The Jim Rome Show.
Jim Rome Show. Mike Yam filling in for Jim. So I'm just looking at some of my notes here and getting a little thrown off at Mike _ Yam. A couple of folks, man, you guys are funny on social media. You know I'm messing around here, which I absolutely love. I promise we'll get to some of those tweets a little bit later in the show. Made reference to it before the break. We're talking to Brian Baldinger about some of the matchups this coming weekend. I think there's some really good ones, and trust me, we'll get back to the Tua conversation coming up in just a bit here, but I do want to sprinkle in some actual football. He had said that, hey, maybe the race for MVP between these two guys that are going head-to-head, and Lamar and Josh Allen, I think it's a great matchup. I know we touched on it with him. We'll get to that in just a second, but I said, hey, there was a quarterback over the weekend who struggled. Their team lost. Didn't look pretty, but I actually do think legit holds the keys to the NFC. And at least the tease was good enough because Garrett's like, yo, I don't know who that is. So the guy is Jimmy G. That's who I'm thinking about right now. And the reason why I think about this is because the lineup is set. The roster is set. Great to see George Kittle back in action. Let me just preface everything that I'm about to say with, I swear I'm not a Jimmy G apologist. I swear I am not that guy. But I do try to look at things pretty evenly and say, hey, there's some reasons for some issues. There's reasons for some positive play. And let's just call a spade, right? Like, I don't really know. I don't take a snap in the NFL, watch all these games every week, talk to a lot of these guys. I was actually at Niners camp twice in August. So we were doing some shows up there for NFL Network. And I think what was fascinating about this is, and I lived in the Bay for like 9 years, and there was a steady dose of love for Jimmy G, but I think there was some growing frustration, and I think there was panic. I had the draft for NFL Network. They had traded all those assets. They move up to the third overall pick. And when I tell you the panic on sports talk radio in the Bay, if it was Mac Jones, I mean, people were like going crazy. They didn't want Mac. And they're like, Trey Lance, like this dude barely has played. Like, what's he going to be? And I remember having and hearing some of these conversations, and we were doing the press conferences virtually at that point when we're asking John Lynch, Shanahan, some of this stuff. God, that seems like so long ago and the worst time ever. But thank God we're at least broken through some of that stuff so you can have face-to-face conversations with people again. But the point is, I remember Shanahan saying this. He's like, dude, we love Jimmy. The problem is Jimmy's had problems staying healthy. If Jimmy's healthy, I don't know if we're making the move to trade up for Trey Lance. You get to the point, though, if you're a front office dude and you trade all these assets, I get it. Like, you kind of have to see what you have here in Trey Lance. At the end of last season, it was, and tell me if I'm wrong here, there was so much love and fanfare for Jimmy Garoppolo, and he wasn't retiring. Like, this wasn't like, hey, appreciate everything that you've done. Like, gonna love seeing you at Levi's Stadium as a fan. Like, no. Like, there is a real possibility that Jimmy might even end up in your division playing against you. Obviously didn't happen, and the Niners didn't want that to happen. But this is almost like a movie to see how Garoppolo has ended up back with this team, and kind of freakish the way the keys to the car are his. Now, they come up with a win. Trey goes down. Last week he's in, and it's not pretty. It's not pretty. And like, I get that. And we get another glimpse. And fortunately for him, he's had a lot of success against the Rams in his career. They match up against those dudes on Monday night. Here's what I'll say. No training camp, right? I was there in August. He's not participating with the team. In fact, this is weird. The 2 days that I was there, open practice. So you're at Levi's, you're on this back practice field, stands are full. And it's basically all the fans are facing the field, watching the players warm up. And then, seven on seven team drills, the whole thing. Jimmy comes out and is throwing 20, 30 yard passes to an equipment guy. Essentially, our set is over there. I start to notice fans in the stands on an open practice start turning their back to the actual play on the field and are sitting there with their phones, just taking pictures and like chanting and yelling to support Jimmy Garoppolo. I'm like, yo, that's weird. Like, you got your team there, and like, you're just watching a dude in a t-shirt throwing 20-yard passes, 30-yard passes to an equipment guy. I'm like, yo, that's weird to me. That's weird to me. Like, glance, okay, but like, he is grabbing real attention. And I'm like, this guy's not even gonna be playing for your team this year. I didn't think he was gonna end up reworking a deal and staying with the Niners. Sure enough, he does. But consider this, working off a shoulder surgery. That's the only reason why he's still with this team. There would have been a team in the NFL that traded for him. They needed to see how healthy the shoulder was for him to get there. Think about these pieces that have now fallen into place. No training camp, trying to increase arm strength. So I was there beginning of August, middle of August. The two times I was up there, I was working with Steve Mariucci, told Mooch he was like 80% arm strength, right? So he wasn't quite there just yet. So doesn't get the playbook. Doesn't have a locker. Like, the Niners don't think he's going to be playing with them. New quarterback coach, like Brian Griese, like we're seeing that dude call Monday Night Football games, right? Like, he's now there. So as much as we want to say, oh, it's the same, it's like not exactly the same. Not exactly the same. Offensive coordinator, last time I checked, we played in the last hour, Mike McDaniel, right? He was their OC. He's talking about Tua. He's on the sidelines for Miami now. So it's a different offensive coordinator. Different quarterback coach. Now, I do get it. Principle-wise, things are the same. Still Kyle Shanahan. Still, relatively speaking, we're still talking about the same personnel. There's some other reasons why it's the same. All I'm saying is it's not exactly the same. First real start. I mean, think about this. Dude's got no preseason. These are what the workouts are. What do you think happens in practice when Trey Lance is healthy? Trey's getting the reps. So as much as I'd like to say, I swear I'm not a Jimmy G apologist, I do understand why there were some struggles a week ago. And truth be told, like, they're a better football team than Denver. Like, I get it. I know what the result was. They are a better football team. They put themselves in some really bad spots. David Lombardi, who actually covers the team for The Athletic, I saw something that he wrote, and I thought it was actually pretty significant. Because as I'm watching the game, I'm seeing all these third and long situations. I'm like, dude, like, they're not going to convert. Like, what is going on right now? and he framed it pretty well. The numbers on third down a week ago were 1-for-10, which is obviously rough and hard to watch if you're a Niners fan. Lombardi goes, so Niners averaged 8 yards to go across their 10 third down tries. Okay, that actually explains why they're 1-for-10. If generally speaking, you're talking about, you know, a 3rd and 8 every single time on average, that's a problem for your offense. So his point was more about second down. You got Jimmy G's fumble, you got the safety, you got the Jeff Wilson fumble. All of those things happen on second down. So as much as we want to point to those numbers, I think there's sort of like a bigger picture that you can paint around this Niners team. Garoppolo 5-0 in the regular season against the Rams. That's the matchup on Monday night. 6-0 in his career. Just general, I'm looking. Yeah, I think it's definitely 5-0 in the regular season. Lone loss obviously comes in the NFC Championship game 2021. So obviously when it counted, they didn't win. There were some issues that were there. We can chronicle those at another date and time. I think for me, though, the bigger issue is Trent Williams being out for 1 to 2 months. That is a real problem. For as much, look, if you get a Madden score, that's a perfect, essentially Madden score, like you're a baller, okay? Trent Williams got a perfect Madden score. Like, that doesn't happen, and he's an offensive lineman. So that goes to show you, if you pay any attention to what the Niners are doing offensively, movement and how Trent is used in that offense, that's a real problem. Staying healthy in that backfield is a problem. To me, though, do we feel like Jimmy being out there and healthy, that gives this team a better chance than Trey right now to go back and get to a Super Bowl? I think you can make the argument, yes. Does it mean that they are better equipped to go and win and do some of the things Shanahan wants to do with the athleticism that Trey brings, with the arm strength that he brings? Like, Jimmy's just different, but you know what you're going to get from him. My point is that this team has been good enough the last few years, and this roster is good enough for them to get back to an NFC Championship game. Win a Super Bowl? Not exactly sure. But right now, the insurance policy that they just cashed, as good as an insurance policy as there is in the NFL. I say pump the brakes here on the hate right now. Give this dude a couple more reps. And I know that's tough because we're talking about middle of the season right now and a fourth game of the year where Jimmy's got to execute. All I'm saying is I still think the guy can play. I still think he can lead this team. And their defense is good enough. Look, Tom Brady and those dudes, like, I'm not saying that the Niners defense is as good as the Bucs, but it's still pretty damn good. I think by the end of the season, we're still talking about them as top 5, top 7 defense in the league. That should still be good enough with some of the pieces that they have there with Debo, with Brandon Ayuk, who has come on strong, and obviously Kittle. There are pieces that are in place. The Trent Williams situation, though, that's the bigger concern. It's not just Jimmy G. All right, coming up, we're going to stick on this NFL train. Oh, yeah. I'll take that, Alvin. I'll take that. Some teams, you know, they love their quarterback. You got some other teams, though, they cannot wait to get to the next guy. Some of those fans actually might be getting their wish kind of quick. But starting quarterback could be actually getting the hook. The answers coming up next on the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio. Rich out.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show with guest host Michael Yam on CBS Sports Radio.
All right, the next 15 seconds is dedicated to every small business disrupted or shut down during the pandemic. You may be eligible for an employee tax credit of up to $26,000 per employee. You can learn more about Omega Accounting Solutions by visiting OmegaTaxCredits.com. All right, I know we've spent a ton of time talking about Tua, about a huge week in the NFL. That conversation continues on right now. John Breach covers the NFL for CBSSports.com is with us right now. John, good to have you on the show, man. It's awesome to hear your voice. And I know, look, I want to get to quarterback play because I saw something that caught my eye that you wrote the other day. But just give me your general take. What did you see last night, and what do you think the aftermath is from Tua?
I mean, obviously, this is not an ideal situation if you're the NFL. And it's not just that Tua's battling back from this perceived concussion on Sunday, even though the NFL insists that he was cleared and good to go and only dealing with the back and ankle injuries. But, you know, this takes place in a primetime game, national television, so everyone kind of has a front row seat to what's happening right now. You know, if this had been a Sunday afternoon game, maybe it doesn't get as much attention. But I do think that people are just want to see the NFL kind of revamp or maybe be more transparent about the concussion protocols, even though it is out there. You can find out exactly what they do. But I think people want to know, hey, why did this guy wobble off the field on Sunday and was somehow able to be cleared to play in a game 4 days later? So I just think people just want questions to be answered. And the NFLPA is investigating, so I guess that's what will eventually happen.
Is there something obvious you think the league can do, maybe on the transparency front, or at least as specifically to the protocols themselves? Like, what are you sitting back and you're watching saying, hey, the NFL should do this? What is that?
Yeah, it's tough because Tua was cleared by an independent neurologist on Sunday. This wasn't the Dolphins, saying, no, you're going to come back in because you want to play and we want you to play and we want to beat the Bills. This was Tua had to be cleared by somebody who wasn't affiliated with the Dolphins before that he could get back on the field. And so when you look at it from that aspect, I'm not sure at that point what could have been done differently other than I know the list of concussion symptoms includes wobbling, basically what Tua was doing on Sunday, and that probably should have disqualified him from playing at all for the rest of that game at least, and then maybe figuring out over the next 48 hours whether he does actually have a concussion. But I think they would just need to probably take the side of caution when you have an incident like this. Because, look, we all saw how he walked off the field on Sunday, and if a player's in that situation, they probably shouldn't be returning to the game. And if he didn't play in the second half, maybe there wouldn't be as much fear right now about the Thursday thing. But he came in second half, and then this happens, and these things compound. And now the NFL and the Dolphins and everyone involved just looks horrible.
John Breach, NFL writer, CBSSports.com with us. You know, there was an actual game. Tua got hurt in a game that had a result. I actually, as I'm thinking about it, we spent so much time talking about Tua. Bad job by me, right? Like, I haven't even given Cincinnati credit for a win, getting back to the 500 mark, seemingly figuring things out, at least for 1 week, about offensive line play that has really not been good through the first few weeks of the season. Hell, even going back to when Joe Burrow even got into the NFL. What did you make of the result from a Cincinnati perspective, getting this W and getting back to 2-2?
Yeah, I was impressed with the Bengals. If anything, they're probably fine with the fact that this victory is being overshadowed and people, because Tua should be the subject that people are talking about. But if you're from the Bengals' perspective here, I mean, this was exactly what you wanted in a win. Your offensive line held up, which has been obviously an issue all year when he's taking six or more sacks. Joe Burrow in the first two games only gets sacked once in this game. He had a pocket to throw from. And, we saw what he can do from a pocket. He's thrown 59-yard touchdowns to T. Higgins. I think he completed three or more passes that went over 35 yards. And so when the Bengals have their long ball working, their offense is difficult to stop. And then the other part is their defense looked good. I mean, Tua did play a good chunk of that first half. But they came up with some big plays. The interception in the first half, the interception that sealed the game off of Teddy Bridgewater. The Dolphins got down inside the 5-yard line a couple times, and the Bengals defense kind of stiffened up and held them out of the end zone. So if you're the Bengals and you just knocked off the final undefeated team in the AFC, you've got to feel pretty good about yourself, especially after starting 0-2.
With you there, John, I couldn't help but notice a conversation in a piece that you put together about quarterbacks and guys getting their hook. And, it's that old adage, right? Like, everyone loves the backup quarterback until you actually got to go and play the backup quarterback. You actually think there's some dudes right now sort of on a lifeline holding on to those starting jobs. Just kind of take me through this list and some players and some fan bases that might see a change relatively soon.
Yeah, I think the obvious one is Mitchell Trubisky. And, we've seen what the Steelers are doing on offense right now, and it is not much. There's complaints from the receivers. It seems like a lot of anonymous complaints, and not all of it's directed at Mitchell Trubisky. I mean, some of it's been directed at the offensive coordinator, Matt Canada. But the bottom line is this team is not doing enough on offense, and you have a very winnable game coming up on Sunday against the Jets. And if Mitchell Trubisky goes out there and throws for 200 yards with three interceptions and the Steelers lose, I think Mike Tomlin's going to have to give some very serious consideration to throwing Kenny Pickett in there. Because at that point, what do you have to lose by making a quarterback change. And then one of them is going to happen right now. Another one's with Jameis Winston and the Saints. And that's not to say that Jameis needed to be benched, but he's been struggling this year, and you have a veteran quarterback behind him in Andy Dalton. And I honestly feel like Andy Dalton can run this version of the Saints offense better than Winston can. I think Dalton's biggest problem, he doesn't love to take chances, but he takes what's there. And I feel like that's what New Orleans needs right now, because their offense just hasn't been able to do anything the past 2 weeks. They only scored 14 points against the Panthers, 10 points against the Buccaneers. They just kind of need a spark. And so maybe Andy Dalton can give it to him. And then there's Baker Mayfield in Carolina. I don't think he's in as much trouble, because I don't really think they have anyone to turn to, and they're coming off their first win. And also, he has only had, you know, 2 months to learn that system, because he just got traded there in July. So he probably has the longest leash. But obviously, you know, Andy Dalton wins Sunday, he's probably got the job for another week or two, as long as he keeps winning. And, you know, if Mitchell Trubisky struggles Sunday, he could get replaced here soon going down the road.
Yeah, I know that there was so much buzz even in the preseason for Kenny Pickett to be that guy that starts the season. You know, the reality is, though, I was okay with going with Trubisky. I think the bigger issue right now is, over these next few weeks, how do you navigate the front end of that schedule from a Pittsburgh perspective? Like, let's not forget here, it was on the road against Cincinnati, it was New England, on the road against Cleveland to start the year. It was like, okay, let's throw out the veteran and then see how this offense can look with Kenny down the stretch. So you're right. I think that one might be the one that we get relatively soon, and maybe for the foreseeable future. Speaking of the Steelers, though, they match up against the Jets. We get to see Zach Wilson out there. What's your expectation level for him?
I would say right now it's not very high. I mean, you have a guy who hasn't played in a month. It's not easy to just come in and be successful in the NFL. When you take that much time off due to an injury, especially when it's a leg injury, you know, you're a little skittish coming back. You're a little worried about taking hits. And, you know, we haven't seen a lot of success from the Jets offense. If we take out and ignore that 90-second, that insanely crazy 90-second span at the end of the game against the Browns, their offense really hasn't done anything. So they've struggled, obviously. You know, they're hoping Zach Wilson can give him a spark. I'm not sure that spark is going to come this week, but this team does have a lot of talent at the skill positions, whether it's Michael Carter and Breece Hall at running back. Garrett Wilson has looked pretty good as a rookie. Elijah Moore. So yeah, if they have guys, they just need someone that can get them the ball. And I think Zach Wilson can eventually do that. But, you know, I'm not going to be starting him on my fantasy team this Sunday. I'll tell you that. Not high expectations for this week.
I did see some reports, no knee brace out there. He says he's 100%. But you're right. There's that human element, that human nature element, where you're coming off of an injury, that trust factor. I mean, hell, we see it in the NBA, and that's not as physical as what we see on the NFL side. Guys just being a little bit more hesitant with some of those moves. And part of the appeal with Zach Wilson is the mobility that he brings to the table. You know, Jerry Jones had said this, John Breech, once again, CBS Sports is with us. He had said this the other week. Hey, I want a quarterback controversy. I'm not ready to go down that path yet. I'm just not. Cooper's played well here, though. What do you make a Dak watch at this point? Because I don't, you're not going to play this weekend, but by all accounts, it looks like it could be week five.
Yeah, Jerry Jones is like a modern day P.T. Barnum, where all publicity is good publicity. That guy will just say anything to put eyes on the Cowboys. I don't think, you know, we all can do the eye test here on our own. And yes, the Cowboys have been winning, great upset against the Bengals and then knocking off the Giants. But I think that was more has to do with how well the defense has been playing. I mean, the defense has played Tom Brady, they played Joe Burrow, and they haven't given up. They've held every opponent under 20 points, and that's impressive when you can look at the teams that they have played so far. And so Cooper Rush has just been – all they're asking Cooper Rush to do is don't lose the game for us, and he's done a great job of not losing the game. And then obviously, you know, he's thrown in two or three clutch throws per game, and that's what they want. But they haven't asked him to do what Dak Prescott does, so it's hard to compare. I don't think anyone really thinks Cooper Rush is going to overtake Dak Prescott. But the one thing that this success does do is that it allows you to let Dak Prescott heal. You don't have to rush him back if the Cowboys had lost these past two games, then they might be thinking, oh my God, we need to get Dak on the field for week four because we cannot lose another game. But now that they've won these two, it's like, all right, no reason to rush. If he's back in week five, great. If we need to hold him until that week six showdown with the Eagles, that's fine. So, yeah, I think Cooper Rush has done a good job of keeping Dak's seat warm. But if I'm Dak Prescott, I am not worried about Cooper Rush stealing my job.
I'm with you on the not rushing back aspect from Dak. It doesn't feel like that's the approach, though. Like, I think it's the exact opposite. I am shocked. I mean, even after the surgery, John, how quickly it was, oh, he's going to be back really soon. Like, we thought this was going to be a really long time. I'm sort of shocked by that.
Yeah, it is surprising. You know, we saw it last year with Russell Wilson when he had the hand injury, sure. And then he rushed back, and he was not the same quarterback when he came back. He was just inaccurate, erratic, just not the Russell Wilson we are used to seeing. And that's what would worry me if I'm the Cowboys. You're thinking, look, we're 2-1. We're in a fine position. Even if we lost the next two games, we would be 2-3. Let's make sure Dak's thumb is fully healed, because the last thing you want is for the hand to get re-injured, and then, you know, he's out 6 weeks. So yeah. I don't see why the Cowboys wouldn't want to play this safe. But, you know, they didn't put him on injured reserve, so obviously they were hoping he could be back before 4 weeks, and that's where that Rams game would be in week five. So, yeah, they seem intent on getting him out on the field as soon as possible. If I was in charge there, I'd probably wait till week six.
Yeah, I'm with you there. John, great stuff, man. Appreciate the insight.
Yep, thanks for having me, Mike.
John Breach, once again, covers the NFL, CBS Sports. I'm with him. I'm not rushing him back. Like, you're playing almost like house money the way Cooper Rush has been playing so far. I didn't see them getting that win against the Giants on Monday night, and yet they did. All right, still to come, all the talk this offseason was about the AFC West, who was going to knock off the Chiefs. Coming up, I'll tell you why, even after a KC loss, Andy Reid's team should still feel confident about winning the division. It's the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.